Good morning, church. Man, still takes a little bit of adaptation to get used to this. Still getting used to the new rhythms of life under the events of the day. I tell you, there's a lot of things that we're trying to do and trying to make changes to suit our new schedule accordingly. I would really encourage, especially all the members of Forest Mill, if you are not in our Instant Church Directory database, that is the primary way we contact you. And we want to be in contact with our members. We're going to make a concerted effort over the coming weeks to call and check in with you. We cannot do that if we don't have a phone number or an email address or something like that. So really encourage you to do that. You can email our church secretary, secretary@forestmill.org, or go to our website and find information on how you can get your information in our church directory app. And there's going to be some changes coming up in that. Hopefully in the coming weeks, we'll be coming out with an announcement to let you know how we're going to be adapting that and improving that, improving our communication skills and our ability to get word out to you and for you to give digitally. Lots of changes coming. For those of you who came up and picked up communion supplies, so thankful you were able to do that. If you didn't get word and you would still like communion supplies for your home, we're going to make those available. They are portable, a little cup with the wafer is in the top, the bread is in the top, and you're welcome to come by the church building sometime during the week and pick up supplies for your family for a couple of weeks. Take as many as you need for that. One change we wanted to add or one note we wanted to add on the one-day meal that's going to be on Thursday night. That is going to be a drive-through pickup only. Angie Yurchik and Doug and some helpers are going to be preparing the meals to go in to-go boxes. And then those who would like to pick up those meals Thursday evening can just drive through, and someone will be out here underneath the awning, and it'll just be like a drive-through service where you only get one option. You can get food or no food. That's it. You can either take the food or leave it, but that's how we're going to do it, the limited exposure as possible. What's that? That is April 9th. That is not this Thursday night. That is next Thursday night. But one note we wanted to add on that. Also, some of you saw this last Wednesday night. I'm trying to do this. Is a Wednesday night Bible study. I'm still learning how to do it, and this last Wednesday night I did it through YouTube. We'll try to make sure that's available. You can check our church Facebook page, Forest Mill Church of Christ on Facebook. We're the only one. You can find us there, and it's really easy. And there will be a midweek Bible study posted there at some point as well for you to join us in that. So there's been so many changes that have been going on. It's tough to keep up. It's tough for us to give the information to you and for you to share in turn your cares and concerns or get information from us. So we're trying our best to make do under the circumstances. I read a story about a hospital administrator who was walking down the hall and then was startled to see this patient just come running out of the operating room, gown just, you know, flapping in the breeze there behind him. And he stopped the frantic patient and he said, "Do you mind telling me why you're running away from the operating room?" And the patient said, who was clearly shaken, he looked at him and said, "It's because of what the nurse said." The administrator said, "Well, what did the nurse say?" And he said, "Well, she said, be brave. An appendectomy is quite simple." The administrator was kind of startled, and he said, "Well, an appendectomy is really simple. I would think that would comfort you." The patient said, "Yeah, it would comfort me, but she wasn't saying it to me. She was saying it to the doctor." So if you think about it, I'll just pause for a moment so everyone at home can finish uncontrollable laughter. If you think about it, surgery is kind of like an act of faith. I mean, you have to have faith that the doctors and nurses know what they are doing, right? You have to have faith that the anesthesiologist is going to get you dosed correctly. You have to have faith that the equipment that is used will function as designed. You have to have faith that the room you were being operated on was cleaned appropriately from the previous operation. There's a lot of faith that goes into having surgery. Because in that moment, you are just completely vulnerable. There's just nothing you can do to help your situation. I've only been in surgery one time, and it was years ago. In fact, I was still in college. I was doing a youth ministry internship in West Tennessee, and it was just a surgery for something that was really, really minor. No big deal at all. But I woke up to my surgeon who was kind of leaning over me. He was not just a surgeon. He was also my friend, Dr. Gooch. And Dr. Gooch leaned over me, and he said, "You scared me to death." And I thought, what in the world have I done to scare you to death? You're the one who's kind of scaring me to death at this point. But he said, in the middle of my relatively minor operation, they realized that my blood was not clotting properly. And as a result, I spent the next 3 days in a hospital room by myself getting IV bags of platelets and steroids. And when I left that hospital, I couldn't go back to the family that I'd been staying with because that wasn't going to be safe. Instead, I went home with my surgeon to recuperate because his family sort of took me in. And then for the next several months, I continued taking medication and I continued making visits to a hematologist for blood work and checkups. On the upside, I got over my fear of needles because after a while you just get tired of them. But I did all of that based solely on the word of one person, my doctor. It wasn't anything that I figured out. It wasn't something that my friend or my neighbor... Everything that I did, everything that I went through was based solely on his advice. We live in a world in which the current health crisis dominates every headline. You can turn it to any news channel or any mainstream TV station and you're going to find analysts and experts who are explaining charts and graphs that will show how the coronavirus is spread or the numbers of those affected in the nation or in the world or in your state or in your community. It'll show the numbers of those who are at risk or how they're at risk or the ability of the medical system to treat those who are at risk. You'll see charts and graphs on the effects of quarantine on the economy. You'll hear experts talking about the effects of quarantine on our psychology. Virtually everything else has ground to a halt. Everything else. And it feels, at least to me, a little bit like we're on God's operating table. That He's doing all this major stuff and we don't completely understand what He's doing, and He's doing it for reasons that, frankly, we can't fathom. I've heard a lot of people, some Christians, some otherwise, who have speculated about why God is doing this. Some people say it's because we've messed up so bad God has sent us to our rooms to learn a lesson. Some people say it's because of all the sin in the world. This is like a plague to wipe that out. And there's a whole bunch of speculation, but the truth is nobody knows. We don't know the mind of God. So we're laying here helpless and we don't even know why God is doing whatever He's doing or why God isn't doing what we'd like for Him to do. So it feels kind of like we're on His operating table. You know, why is this happening? When is it going to end? How long is it going to last? Where is God in all of this, right? So at times like this, it's really good, really helpful for us to look at those who have gone before us and ask those same sorts of questions. And you can find these kinds of questions repeated over and over throughout Scripture in stories like Job's story, right? Or in the Psalms. In Psalm 13, which is one of my favorites, and it's sort of just a quintessential psalm of lament. It's really short. It's really compact, but it's got everything packed in there. If you have your Bibles and you want to follow along, or if you're doing it online, you can go to Bible Gateway and go there and find the same passage in Psalm 13, where the psalmist, in this case David, says this: "How long, Lord, Will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, Lord my God. And by the way, this look and answer, if you put it into modern English, maybe even an easier, simpler, more straightforward translation was, listen to me and help me. Hear me and help me, O Lord, my God. Give light to my eyes, or I'll sleep in death. And my enemy will say, I have overcome him. And my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. It's a short psalm, and as small as it is, as tiny as it is just packed full of this rich theology and teaching about God. And we don't know the precise circumstances under which David wrote this psalm. Sometimes we do, but most of the times we don't. And we don't in this case. But we can imagine times in David's life, from just what we know about his story, we can imagine times when this particular psalm would apply. Maybe it was when he was on the run from King Saul, who was really powerful and who was out to kill him, right? Or maybe it was when he was facing down a revolt that was led by family or friends or people that he loved. And so though we don't know the specifics of the situation in this particular case, in this prayer, we can clearly see that David is at a loss. He doesn't know why this is happening. Doesn't know why God hasn't stepped in to stop it. He doesn't know where God is or what the plan is. And yet, even in the absence of God, he prays. And church, if I could leave you one note of reassurance in all this, I want you to know that nothing in the troubles of life or in the experience of the absence of God cancels the privilege of faith to speak directly to God. That even when we feel God is absent, we can be confident that we'll be heard. We experience all sorts of distress in this life. Some of that distress, we can really, I guess, categorize it broadly into the three areas, all the distress of life. The three areas are trouble with others, trouble with ourselves, trouble with God. Those are our three biggest problems, right? But no matter which one of those you think the problem was, whether it's trouble with others, trouble with yourself, or trouble with God, the only avenue open to, in all three areas, the only avenue we have open for recourse leads us to prayer. Prayer is the only place we can go for sure recourse in this trouble in life. And even though God feels absent, this prayer is based on the belief that the lives of the people of God, the lives of the people who belong to God, still matter to God. That no matter what the circumstances may look like outside, no matter what the circumstances may look like in your community or in my community, no matter what the government is doing or not doing, no matter what you see in the newspapers or on the TV or here in the radio, no matter what is going on in this world, the lives of the people of God, the lives of those who belong to God, still matter to God. Martin Luther called this stance of this particular prayer in Psalm 13, he calls it the state in which hope despairs, and yet despair hopes at the same time. Because we don't know where God is. I don't know what God is doing. I don't know why He's doing it. And yet I hope in Him. And so like Israel, we struggle with God. Like Jesus, we lament. Like Job, we protest. Like the martyrs who have gone before us, we ask, how long? Yes, we can ask God how long, like David did here. We can ask God why, like Job did. We can ask God, where are you? Why don't you do something? And for some of us, especially those who are raised in Christian homes, questions like that feel really sacrilegious. I mean, they feel like the wrong thing to say to God. As if asking God, where are you, God, is somehow taunting God to lash out in anger. Right? Like we're a bad child and we ask our parents, why would you hurt me? And we're afraid Dad's going to whip off the belt and say, you think that's hurt? I'm going to show you hurt. When we ask God, where are you, God? Is that taunting God? And at times, like the times we're in, I admit that I don't have perfect answers. I don't have solid reassurances. I don't have pat responses to give when people ask these questions. When we're surrounded by injustice or hunger or disease, abuse, neglect, death. This question, where is God? It can cloud our faith. It can lead to doubt. But even though we don't have any rationale, even though we don't have those solid answers, what we do have in vivid technicolor imagery is a witness. Where is God? God is hanging on the cross. God did not avoid suffering or explain it away. Instead, God chose it for our sakes. God loved us by participating in the suffering of the world. Jesus said, I came to give my life for the life of the world, to serve rather than to be served. This week I was reading something written by one of my professors at Lipscomb, John Mark Hicks. I wanted to give him credit for this. Because he was grappling with this question, where is God? And he said, where is God? God is present in the hungry, the prisoner, the coronavirus patient on the ventilator. Jesus said, if you serve the least of these, you serve me. Where is God? God is acting through the healthcare worker, the volunteer, the social worker, the first responders, and through pastoral care. And Jesus said, whoever gives a cold cup of water in my name is my disciple. God is not absent. But He is hidden. And even though He's hidden, God is made visible in Jesus, in the suffering, and those who follow Jesus. We may not know the reasons that God has or doesn't have, but because of what God has done in Jesus, we know that we can trust Him. In Jesus, God suffered with us as one of us. God empathizes with us as one who knows suffering from the inside, rather than as a distant God who's just looking on from the outside, which is sometimes the way we think about Him. God shares our suffering with us. We can trust God because God suffers with us. And not just one time, but for all time. Where is God? God is here. God is present in the suffering, with the sufferer, and as a sufferer. Praise God that we have a God like that. Not a God who abandoned us in our time of greatest need, but a God who walks with us through the valley of the shadow of death. A God who sits with us, who cries with us, who walks with us, asking the questions. A God who mourns with us. A God who suffers with us. This morning, we may not have all the answers, but we have a God who loves us despite our lack of knowledge, a God who loves us despite our lack of ability, despite our shortcomings, even despite our sin, and has made every provision to overcome that for us. And this morning, if you are struggling, if you want us to pray for you, and I know this is really different, we're having to adapt, but we would love to pray for you. You can text myself or one of the elders. You can contact us through our Facebook page or our website. But we want to pray for you. And if we can do that, we'll do that throughout the week. And we'll contact you and let you know and try to find out some more about your situation. Whether you live here in Manchester or Coffee County or you live off. If you want us to pray for you, we would love to do that. This morning, I want to encourage you as we listen to and sing along with this next song to find your place with God. Let's do that together.